Hey, Talk Shop fans, I have a very exciting announcement. Join me and Fenimore Lane at the Mayflower Inn and Spa in Washington, Connecticut for a celebration of design on Saturday, May 18th. Journey to the countryside to shop our all-day design bazaar with two tents and over 30 amazing vendors in the home, fashion, and lifestyle space. Or take part in our design summit with one-of-a-kind panels and speakers, including Talk Shop Season 2 guest Annie Myers-Shire of This Oak House, in conversation with me and Farrow & Ball's color expert. Feel free to bring the kids and come hungry. Danry has children's activities covered, and Lee Jofa will be hosting a beautiful picnic by the pond. It's sure to be magical, and there's no time to wait. We already sold out of our all-day passes, so to learn more and pick up your tickets, visit the link in the show notes or via my Instagram bio. I hope to see you all there.
As my business has grown, I now have inventory, so to speak, I see a piece of art at a vintage store or an object, I just buy it with the notion that I'd love to use this on a project. But it doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes it ends up in my house and sometimes it ends up on a shelf.
Welcome to Talk Shop. I'm Ariel Oaken, a New York-based interior designer, writer, and editor looking to bring a little bit of magic into our homes every day. After years as a writer and editor in the interiors world, I founded my own editorial site, Fenimore Lane, in 2020, and the Talk Shop interview series was born. Each week, I delve into the personal experiences of the top interior designers and tastemakers around the globe. This week, I'm joined by Katie Rosenfeld, a fellow self-taught designer whose career started on Wall Street and eventually led to design through starting her blog, Bogle Street, in 2007. Originally from Tampa, Florida, Katie spent time in New York and Los Angeles before landing in Boston with her family. In 2012, after her home was published in Better Homes and Gardens, Katie launched her design career and eventually her own firm, Katie Rosenfeld & Co. Katie is equal parts vintage and modern. Never trendy and always comfortable, she brings the same sense of stylish ease to her designs. Her firm's goal is to design a home that feels warm, comfortable, and familiar, but thoughtfully executed, well-functioning, and beautiful. At the end of the day, Katie's aim is to help create a home that reflects the client's life, with her signature warmth and layered textiles peppered throughout. Please join me as we welcome the lovely Katie Rosenfeld to the podcast. Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ariel. So happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on.
I know, me too. It's been a long time since we spoke. I think it's been since COVID.
I know. We met. I feel like we're like old Instagram pals.
I know. I feel that way too, definitely. And I know like so many things have happened in the world, I guess, since I met you on Instagram. And I do feel like I know you.
I know. I feel the same way, especially because I love watching your punch list videos, which we'll talk about.
Oh,
I love
boy.
To kick off the conversation, can you describe your style in three words or less?
Yes. I would say my style is warm, layered, and inviting.
Oh, I love that. It's so true, too. I would live in all of your projects. They make me...
That is really nice.
It's true. They're so cozy and livable, and I love your work.
Well, you know I'm not trained, right?
I know. And that's another thing I want to talk about because I'm not either. So for those who may not know, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are at this point in your life right now?
So I would say amongst sort of the Instagram crowd and the TikTok crowd, probably what would be called an old timer at this point, but I did get a late start to my career. I am not a trained designer. I didn't go to school. I have no formal background in anything related to interior design whatsoever. I actually used to work on Wall Street and kind of in a PR marketing capacity. So literally nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
I accidentally fell into this career very naturally once I moved out of New York into the suburbs and renovated several of my own houses. I now have a firm that has, I think, 7-8 employees. We're outside of Boston. When I first started, you know, of course, as most people, I did small projects and then they grew and grew and grew. And now we're all over the country.
I love it. That's such an amazing story. And we have a very similar story because I also didn't go to design school. I'm not formally trained. I went to grad school for public affairs and was working in a totally different sector and started doing it on the side for fun, and the rest was history.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice lens to look at things, because you're not shrouded and clouded with things that are rules and judgment, yeah, and stuff like that. So I feel like there's a distinct difference between mm-hmm. people who are trained and people who are accidental.
I know, I agree. And it's so interesting because you started in Wall Street and finance, and then you had a blog, right? In 2007?
I did. That's when I really started being serious about this being a career as opposed to just a hobby.
Right.
I started this little tiny blog. It was called Vogel Street. That was the name of the street that I lived on in a suburb of Boston. And I love writing. Actually, if I'm really being honest, part of me in my former life thought about being a journalist. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I kind of do love the written word and writing and all of that. So I started blogging, and it actually did sort of on a micro level take off. I had some followers, and really that's kind of what started my career. As much as I bitch and moan about social media and what a pain it is and how much I hate it, I do owe pretty much my entire career to it. So
yeah,
there's that.
Knowing that background now about writing, it makes sense. I mean, so many of your presence on Instagram is so, like, you have such a distinct voice and you're a great writer. And I think part of that is what helps contribute to people feeling like they know you on Instagram, and then also getting really engaged in the work that you're doing.
That's nice to hear. I think it's either one or the other. It's either an emoji or like a 20-minute diatribe.
Essay, right? Yeah. So funny. So you moved around a bit first before you landed in Boston. You were in the suburbs of New York, and I was reading that you started a business working with artists.
I did. So my background from college, I studied art and art history.
Oh, interesting.
And then I double majored in philosophy. So I was sort of always one of these kind of heady kind of people.
Yeah.
My grandmother was an artist. My dad dabbled in painting, even though he was a physician. I've got it kind of running in the family. My mom was not a practicing designer, but she truly is a decorator in the true sense of the word. And so I studied art, and after college, you know, I had no direction. I didn't major in anything practical. So I didn't know really the concept of like starting a career that could actually make money and fund a lifestyle was so foreign to me.
Yeah.
I started working in the art industry, but the money was so bad that I eventually had to sort of leave that career. That's when I moved on to Wall Street. And then when I left Wall Street is when I picked the art career back up. And that's when I developed an art consultancy business that I ran out of my house, which was in Short Hills, New Jersey at that point.
Wow.
And I would hang art all over my house and have these great events. I would invite 100 people over for wine and cheese and to look at art.
Oh my God, that's so fun.
Yeah, it really was fun. They would, so my house was always, you know, fresh because I got to hang new things on the walls. And
yeah,
inevitably what would happen is, you know, people would come over and they would wander around and say, well, you know, I love this piece and I'll buy it, but who did your kitchen? Or
right,
I love the drapes in your living room. And it kind of started that way. And at first I sort of resisted getting into the whole decorating part, but eventually it became very clear that people liked it, and I gave it a try and ended up really loving it. And that's literally how my career got started, just accidentally.
And the more that I've been talking to people in the industry, it's so interesting to hear that a lot of people had a very similar path where like they never thought that interior design could even be a career path for them, but it found them.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, the key for me is just that I never thought that it would not only a career path, but a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
I started out doing like pillow projects, you know, like little bitty. This is before social media. So like really and truly tiny little projects. And I never would have thought that it would have developed into a thing where I employ other people. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Were you always interested in design? Like, was it something that you would do to like relax?
I mean, I always wanted my my home environments to look a certain way and to be pretty. And art was always a big thing for me, but I don't know that I necessarily ever thought I was talented. I still don't necessarily, I mean, this is going to sound really weird, but I still don't necessarily consider myself talented. It's sort of just what I do.
Well, that's completely asinine. You are so talented.
it's more just, I try to do what comes naturally. And, you know, sometimes this business is very, there's a big veil across it, right? Because it's not like we photograph every project we do, because the reality is some people don't listen, right?
Yeah.
And the project turns in a direction that you didn't necessarily expect or want it to.
Yeah.
And some people don't finish.
Often.
Yeah, no, for sure. So these pictures that we all put out there, you know, the reality, I hope I'm not like breaking the veil, but you know, the reality is that a lot of like work and effort goes into photographing a project to make it look the way that it feels natural to the person who designed it, right?
Oh yeah. Photographer, stylist.
Right.
Yeah. And there's 12 people on set making sure that the, you know, the pillow is fluffed the exact right way, but it's not karate chopped, but it looks lived in.
Right.
It's a whole experience.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And I do think that when I'm allowed to do my thing, those are the best pictures. I mean, those are always my favorite projects where I almost approach things, or at least I try, as if I lived there. If it was my house, what would I do?
Yeah, that's interesting, because two topics that have come up frequently or themes is, one is trusting your gut and going with your intuition, and the other is client trust. Mm-hmm. And when a client really trusts you and comes to you for your vision, those are when the projects turn out the best. And I think it's so true.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that trust is imperative, but also it's not just trust. It's like relinquishing control.
Right, exactly.
Because somebody can trust you and say all the right things that they want you to do, this, that, and the other, but they have to let you do it.
Yeah. When a client has full faith, you know, they're coming to you and they're saying, I love everything in your portfolio. You're the expert. Here's what I like, and here are the palettes and, you know, inspiration images that I like, but you run with it. I think those are the projects when you're really allowed to create to the best of your ability.
For sure. And you know it right away too, because even in the presentation, you know, if someone is super excited from day one when you present and they get it, it's all about feeling natural and being aligned with the person visually and creatively and personally. And the ones that have the bumps where you're kind of having to pivot to do things that don't feel natural to you, at least from my perspective, are the ones where you're like, ugh, buzzkill. Yeah. You know?
Well, I love that you're self-taught like I am as well, because I feel like a big piece of intuition plays into design when you didn't go to design school. Do you think not being formally educated gives you an edge in some way? Or do you ever wish that you went to design school? How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's really funny. At this point, I'm way too old to have feelings about that. I think at the beginning, it would have been super helpful if I could wield a tape measure, which I literally cannot.
Yeah.
I can't even measure from one end of the room to the other without the tape measure like flying in my face and snapping shut.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice to have some technical competency, and sometimes I feel like slightly, you know, really held back by that. But the fact of the matter is, even if you have that ability, you still need to surround yourself. Like, everybody can't be good at everything, and one person can't be good at everything. And I know what my strengths are, and they are textiles and patterns and prints and wallpapers and even like proportion and furniture to some extent. But you just have to build your little village with people in it who supplement your strengths. And it's kind of like building a band. I'm like really into music, but I always call our firm the band, because like,
I love that metaphor. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, you all have to be able to like do your thing simultaneously and have it be, in cadence and have it result in something that works beautifully. So
I love that. It's so true. One of the things that Bunny said, Bunny Williams was on the beginning of the season, and she was talking about how it's so important to identify your strengths and then find people who are really excellent at doing the things that you are not great at, because it helps you excel and grow your business.
100%. And I mean, even me at this stage in my career, I would love to be able to sort of step away from the day-to-day a little bit. And I'm trying to transition into a model that sort of works like that. But the reality is that the biggest thing that you, that I, and the other designers have is the ability to solicit and close business, right? So if you don't have a rainmaker, you don't have a business.
That is very true.
I can be like the best person on earth, so talented with fabrics, but if I can't close a deal and get clients, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think that also authenticity plays in, because at least for me, people tend to want to be here in the studio with us.
Yeah.
They have fun. They come in. There's a lot of time wasted. I'm not going to lie. We do a lot of like chit chat.
Yeah, but it's like fun. Bonding. That's how you bond with your clients and like get to know them.
For sure. But like, it would be painful if you didn't want to be with your designer. It would just be, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah. I feel like that authenticity moves across your social presence. Like, you are like unabashedly you. And I get such a kick out of your videos that you do. Punch List is amazing to watch because I love seeing the behind the scenes. How did that come about?
That honestly, again, like most of what I do, is impulsive and accidental. During COVID, my husband and I had downsized. We had sold our house out in the Boston suburbs and moved into the
I remember that you were like kind of showing the behind the scenes of renovating your house. And
well, we never intended to own another house in Boston. That's the funny thing. It's just that COVID happened, and you know, I immediately went running back to Wellesley like a whim.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people left.
I mean, we were very early adapters in that sense. And we're very lucky because we bought a wonderful house that we probably couldn't touch now.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have a good business sense, and it felt intuitive to film the whole renovation process, because I thought it would be informative. And also during COVID, we weren't photographing projects. So I was really weak on content.
Yep.
And that's how I created it.
That's something I was just talking about with Heidi Callier, who was just on, about, you know, the cadence of social media can be so hard because it's like a hamster wheel. And when you're you have a shoot year, but then it's like another year that you have to hold these images, if they're being picked up in print, or you have a book coming out. And so you have to find other ways to create content without sharing exclusive projects that you have an embargo on. And it's really hard.
Yeah, definitely. Although it's funny because I mean, this is probably not going to be a popular statement, but I don't ever hold my photos. Like, I won't do it.
I mean, it's smart because you can use them for Instagram.
Well, they mean much more to me on social media and for the purposes of marketing my business than they do in any editorial sense, which I'm always thrilled and tickled pink when someone wants to publish something that I've worked on, but I will never hold photos hostage for anything.
Yeah, it's hard. We had to hold our new Canon project for a year.
Ugh.
And it's hard because, you know, you shoot something and you're so excited to share it, and then you're sitting on it literally for a year. Also to fill in, like to backfill when you don't have stuff that you can share in the interim, but you're sitting on 75 great photos that you can't use.
Yeah, no, for sure. Although I do think to some degree also you and I are extra paranoid and sensitive about it, and that we assume that the content looks stale to the audience when in reality it doesn't, right?
Yeah, I know. That's so true. When you think about, you know, over the years since you founded your firm and how long you've been doing it, do you think your aesthetic has changed at all or developed over the years?
I definitely think it's developed, but I don't think it's changed. I mean, I have always been a hardcore traditional designer.
Yeah.
I've always loved prints and mixing them and pattern and ruffles and drapery. And I've never been a minimalist, but I feel like I, at the beginning, was immature and now I'm mature. That's how I would put it.
That makes sense. I feel that way about my own portfolio as well. I think when you start, especially when you're not trained, you learn as you go. And the more you're doing it, the more you invest in reading about things and kind of like putting your own time in to educate yourself outside of the work you're doing with clients. And then your portfolio reflects it, I think.
For sure. And I also can look back at some of my really early work and have a couple of cringe moments, but then I really study the work. And I think to myself, like, I really understand what was happening there and why I did that. And, you know, you kind of have to go easy on yourself because it really is a developmental process. Even if you are trained, even if you did go to school, even if you worked with the best of the best of the best, there's always space for everyone to improve and evolve.
Absolutely.
And diversify and take it to the next level. So it's all a process.
Totally. And I think every designer, whether they're trained, not trained, worked at the best blue chip A-list firm, like I think everybody feels that way. If you were to go back 10 years in someone's portfolio and pick a random project and show it to them, like sometimes you're going to have a cringe moment and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you founded your own firm, tell me a little bit about that. Like you didn't work for anyone else, right? You
never
went off and started your own thing. And how did that happen? What drew you to branch off to start your own firm? How was it like hiring in the beginning and working with a team?
Well, I didn't hire for a really long time. And when I first started out, I actually had a business partner. So my best friend out in the burbs was also a very talented designer. She actually was trained. She did go to school for interior design. She is one of the most free-spirited, creative people. She lives in Texas now, so she no longer lives in Boston. But at the time, we worked together, and it was very clear that we both loved to do this, but she was doing it sort of as a way to keep busy and engaged and as a hobby. Mm-hmm. And it was very clear that I was sort of had that business ambition.
Yeah.
And so eventually it became clear to both of us that we weren't really following the same path and that I wanted to work maybe a little bit more than she did. So we separated, and that's when I went out on my own, and I didn't have an assistant for years. I was by myself doing, God knows, I don't know how I got along. I really don't. I was handwriting
purchase orders. Oh my God.
I was calling in purchase orders. Oh my God.
It's so stressful.
Yeah. If you go back to some of these showrooms and ask them what it used to be like, I think they used to hang up the phone and like throw a dart at my face. I was so annoying. I had no organization.
Well, when you first start out, especially when you're starting your own firm and you haven't been somewhere else, you don't know how other firms structure basic things like getting memos from the D&D or, you know, and so it's almost harder in the beginning. You don't know what you don't know. So you don't know that your learning curve is so steep, but there's so much that like would have been so much easier had you known some of those things.
Oh yeah, for sure. But also you don't want, I'm a big believer in getting your knees dirty and learning from doing. And
yeah,
I do see, and not to be critical, but you know, in this sort of social media age, everyone sort of has that veneer. They've got it all together, and you start your business and a year later you're published and you've got an assistant and you've got a procurement manager. I mean, it's all such bullshit. Like you really
know, it takes time and work, and there's no one in this industry that has not made an expensive mistake.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, you're only as good as your last project, and you have to remember that. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, me having to do this stuff on my own. Now, of course, from the very beginning, I had to contract CAD out because I don't know how to use it.
Right.
So that's always been the case. But I was sort of tireless. You know, I would spend days and days and days and days on textile research and going to the design center. And, you know, I really threw myself into the sort of tactile side of things. And definitely, I don't necessarily know if this is a recommendation, but from the very beginning, I was super engaged and had sort of a no off limits kind of an approach with my clients. So I was answering emails at 11 p.m. I was on the phone at 7 a.m. with a baby on my hip. Those things did happen.
Yeah. Well, when you're building a business, you actually kind of have to do that. I think it's hard to, it's a catch 22, right? Because you need to have boundaries, obviously. But it's also a client services business and people need to feel taken care of and you need to address their concerns in a timely manner. So it's kind of situationally dependent, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that for me, where I draw the line is my team. I'm very protective of them and their personal time. I will answer the text at 11 a.m. or I will say to the client, you're driving me crazy and I want to go to bed.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you tomorrow and don't call me. I'll call you.
Yeah.
But I didn't always have the confidence to do that in the beginning. And I really don't, I guess where I draw the line is just, it's one thing when you own the business and you get all the benefits of owning the business and running the business, mm-hmm. but if you're just working here, you don't have to answer texts at night. Yeah.
No, you should not have to. Absolutely.
Totally inappropriate to be answering like sofa questions on your personal time.
No. And I think one of the things about our industry is people should have a nice work-life balance. There is no such thing as a decorating emergency and people should enjoy their work because it's a true expression of like loving creativity and loving what we do. And so when clients are driving, you know, the people that work for you crazy, it ruins the whole excitement and happiness of being able to do a job that you feel so lucky to be doing.
And let's face it, it's like dating for me.
It is dating 100%.
On paper, it could look great. It could be a great project. It could be a great project for you. But chemically, if the vibe isn't there and you're just not clicking with the person or getting along with them or aligned sort of at that chemical level, and it doesn't work out, it's painful.
It's not worth it.
No.
It's just not worth it. And I always am a big believer in if something's not right, something great will come around. And like, I just feel like taking projects on from a scarcity mindset is never good for anyone. And so you have to be able to let something go that's not right for you, and something that is right for you will come up sooner rather than later.
I totally agree.
Are there any projects that you are particularly proud of or just really love?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I love a lot of my projects. I mean, I love a lot of my clients too right now. There's a lot of things that I haven't photographed yet or that I'm just getting around to photograph. Like I guess the COVID era is when I feel like my work really kind of started to blossom. I really, actually really love my own house.
Heidi actually was saying that she feels her house is where she really kind of came alive as a designer because it was so personal for her.
I feel the same way. And I come home to it every night and still love it and don't want to change it and don't.
Yeah.
I feel so, it's so beloved for me.
Yeah. I think there's something really beautiful about that, especially as a designer, because it's your home is kind of the truest expression of what your personal taste and style is as a designer. So when you are very true to your instincts and your gut on it and you still love it, you know, 5 years later, I think that's something really special.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. And there are other projects that I feel that way about, but nothing like my own house. I feel like this recent house, the most recent house that I designed for myself and that I still live in is sort of really very me, quote unquote.
And I want to talk about Vanity & Co. also, which we've ordered from and we love. Where did the idea come from for starting that facet of your business?
So that came from renovating that house, really.
Oh, interesting.
That's literally where that came from.
So for those who are listening who don't know what I'm talking about, Katie started this amazing bathroom vanity company and they're so well-crafted and beautiful and you can customize them in different ways and they're just really well executed and pretty.
Thank you. Well, we're getting ready to launch e-commerce in April.
That's amazing.
I know. It's only taken me like 142 years to get this business off.
I mean, it's really hard and you have a full-time design business and it's a lot.
For me, the hurdle in this business was I didn't think that it would be so difficult to make something and sell it. And it's really, really difficult.
It's a lot of work.
It's beyond a lot of work. I mean, it's learning a new language, at least it was for me, and very humbling. And basically, when I renovated my house, high COVID, this is when people were like still Lysoling their
groceries,
you know, Instacart, right? You know, people weren't even going outside. I was renovating this house and I really wanted, there were a lot of things, as you know, during COVID, our workflow was interrupted and the logistics involved in getting things done were different. You just couldn't do the normal sequence of things that you would do.
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to find old chests and make them into vanities, but it wasn't necessarily practical. And I realized that there was this real dead space in the bathroom furniture area. And I kind of always knew that there was, but I decided after I made my own vanities, after I created them, I thought, you know what? These people might like these.
Yeah. And they feel handcrafted. They feel really special. And I it's hard to find anything in the bathroom category, really, unless you're going fully custom, that feels like that.
I agree. And that was the whole concept here is that, and it's actually one of our sort of marketing things, is that you'll love them so much that you'll want to bring them with you. And they are freestanding, so you can. So, I mean, the concept is basically they are furniture for your bathroom, not quote unquote cabinetry.
Right. Yeah.
I have such amazing, amazing people working with me on this. I could never have done this without all of them, literally. And it's been a labor of love, but I'm really hoping that people will enjoy them and that this blank space in the market can, you know, maybe get filled a little bit.
I love it. I mean, we use them in projects and they're stunning. So I can't wait for them to be available to the public and not just trade.
Definitely.
Well, speaking of trade, let's talk a little bit about interior design. Is there a favorite element of the design process for you?
Almost in every case, it's got to be doing the textile scheme.
Yeah. I mean, textiles are such an anchor of all of your work. When you think of your projects, it's the expert way that you layer pattern and color and kind of mix it all together without it feeling too busy. I feel like that's your sweet spot.
I mean, it's definitely where I get the most joy in finishing a project too, because even if I have to be honest, the very last part where you hang art and get it accessorized, that's when the rooms really become like multidimensional and almost like magical.
I feel like a home.
Yeah.
When you are designing a space, what do you think is the most important thing to keep in mind?
Proportion.
Yeah.
Having different shapes and heights. And I like things cozy, but not crowded. I don't like having a lot of empty space, but that's a personal thing. And I think you could have to get to know your client and understand some people don't share that
view. Yeah.
And it's a very personal thing, but
I'm with you on that. When you are more of a minimalist, having intentional breathing room is part of the aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're designing a very traditional sort of cozy home, it doesn't work because it looks like something was missed or not finished out.
Correct. Yeah, I know. I definitely feel that way.
Is there a design rule that you kind of always follow, or do you think there's one that's absolutely made to be broken?
Not necessarily rules, but I always feel like go with the grain of the hair.
I like that saying.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like forcing things never works. And
yeah,
the architecture and the period. I mean, if you're dealing with a house that is in a certain genre, embrace it. Don't try and make it into something that it isn't.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's so true. What is the best advice for designing interiors that you have ever received, and who is it from?
Funny enough, I do have kind of a motto. The best advice that applies to my business, basically the idea is worry about yourself and not other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great life motto, not just a business motto.
Yeah. I mean, because if you get caught up in what other people are doing or thinking, or what you're not doing and what they are doing, you'll tank.
Yeah. And it muddles your, it can mess up how you design too.
100%. You just have to, at least for me, it's like nothing, no one else, it does, it, none of it matters.
100%. I love that advice. I think it's great life advice and also business advice. Well, let's talk a little bit about you personally. What do you think your home says about you?
I think your home says everything about you, just like what you wear says everything about you. I think it's all, these are all like just little means of expression. What you cook says something about you, what you wear, the fragrance or lack thereof. I mean, it's all, you present yourself in all these different ways. So how your right. home looks and feels should really be like an absolute replica of your personality, I think.
Yeah, I agree. What are some of your favorite places to shop for home?
I love vintage. I mean, I really do. When a client lets me do vintage, I'm the happiest. So for that, I mean, there's obviously a lot of places physically. I love to go home to Tampa and shop vintage because it's still kind of old school and all these shops.
Yeah, there's probably so much great rattan and stuff.
Oh, it's really great. I went recently too. And not only is it, you can still do a haul in the true sense of the word, but it's still very mom and pop. And I love to go in the shops and visit people and weed through all the stuff. But I mean, as a practical matter, I use Cherish and First Dibs a lot.
Yeah, we do too. And we also go to local shops. I mean, I think there's something to be said about going in person, because a lot of these antique and vintage stores don't really have an online presence, and you can't find half of the good stuff that they have tucked in like a random corner unless you're there, which is kind of fun to do those hauls. And that's where you find the gems.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think as my business has grown, I now have inventory, so to speak, or we,
yeah.
If I see a piece of art at a vintage store or an object, I just buy it with the notion that I'd love to use this.
You'll find a place for it.
But it doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes it ends up in my house and sometimes it ends up on a shelf. So.
I know it's tricky. It's dangerous that we have a storage unit too. And it's tricky sometimes because there's so much beautiful stuff out there. And I actually talked to Paloma about this when she came on. It can be such a slippery slope once you start with a storage unit, because everybody finds stuff that they love. And then you're like, oh, I'll put that in a project one day. And then you have it. And it somehow finds its way into your house, I feel like.
Yeah. Or worse yet, what I have is a whole graveyard of things that are wonderful. And I could use them on projects, but I don't want to get rid of them, even though I have no place for them.
I know. You get like emotionally attached to them. It's
it's
hard.
It's a problem.
What do you think have been the three biggest influences on your aesthetic in your life?
I would say just my family, my mother, my life, and maybe, you know, I'm always really sort of inspired and influenced by the past. I'm a very big history buff, and not in like a haughty sense, but like in a sort of mass consumption of documentaries and pictures and books sense.
I love that.
Pop culture always influences me. Music always influences me, but not in a direct way. Like, it's really sort of just my own personal growth. I don't know. That's an impossible question.
I always love thinking about, and this is something we spoke about when Gil Schaefer came on, is the link between memory and design, and how, and when you reference like your mother as a influence on your aesthetic, there's so much that we store in our memories from our childhoods and the homes we grow up in. And I think people that are in this industry are just born attuned to their surrounding environment. And so you kind of like absorb all of that in you, and then it comes out in different ways when you're designing. And I think it's a really beautiful meshing of memory and creating.
It is. And even my two daughters, you know, they're still so young, but even when they moved into this, you know, tiny little apartment and they're starting to fill it with stuff, And one of the sweetest things they said was, well, it's actually kind of ironic because they call my mother Mimi. They said, I want our apartment to look like Mimi's house.
Oh, that's so special though. I mean, that's like it traveled from her into you and then from you into them. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think also part of it was that they wanted my mom to help them decorate and not me, but.
Well, that makes sense. I feel like it's when you're in your early 20s, geez. Of course you're going to go to your grandma. That's so sweet. And I love that they live together. That's so special. I have two girls also, but they're babies. So that's really sweet.
It is. It's definitely like, it's a bucket list kind of an item.
Well, to end our podcast, we always do take 10, which are our sort of like rapid fire questions. They have nothing to do really with interior design, but I like asking them because I feel like they're personal questions about you.
Okay.
So what is your favorite food?
Cheese.
Cheese. I love it. That's amazing.
Anything with melted cheese.
Hadley, she said bread and butter. And I was like, yes, like cheese and bread and butter. I could live on those forever and be really happy. Favorite drink?
A margarita.
Yes. I'm with you on that. Favorite film?
Animal House.
That's a great one. That's also like one of my husband's favorite movies. It's so good. Favorite hotel?
The Marbella Club in Spain.
That's on my bucket list. I have like a very big bucket list of places I want to go when my kids are older.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Favorite city?
Boston.
Boston is so rich in architectural history. I feel like people don't realize how much there is there to take in.
It's such a great place to raise a family, but still have all the culture of a big city. And it's a very beautiful, pretty, charming, cozy kind of place.
Yeah. And the suburbs are so pretty there. Favorite bedding?
Matuk.
I love Matuk also. I love asking because people in our industry are so particular about bedding. I always love to hear what people say.
Yeah. Big fan.
Tea or coffee, and how do you take it?
Both. Coffee, I like any dairy. Sometimes I mix dairies. Tea, I like a little milk and some honey.
Favorite playlist, which I'm interested to hear you say because you're such a music buff.
You know, I don't have any playlists because I can't use a phone and I don't know how to use Spotify.
Oh my God, you need to have your girls teach you how to use Spotify. It will change your life.
I mean, I do have it. It's just, it frustrates me. I listen, I'm really weird in the sense that I like to listen to whole albums. So if I'm listening to something, I want to listen to the artist and a whole record.
That makes sense though. I feel like you're like, you kind of get immersed in the album and then you just are living in that.
Yeah. And it depends on what kind of a mood I'm in. I mean, I could want to listen to a John Mayer album and I could want to listen to a CCR album, just depending on my mood.
I love that. What is your favorite weekend activity?
Watching TV.
Yeah, just relaxing.
Yeah.
Like people don't realize how busy this job can be. And so weekend rest is kind of crucial when you're like maintaining and running a business.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could give you sexier answers, but the fact of the matter is that is my favorite thing to do.
Me too. And the last question, which I love asking people, what is your favorite design book?
I do love Gil Schaefer's books. I like all of them. Aren't there three of them or are there two of them? And I can't remember.
Yes. His third just came out, which is fantastic. And I have all three on my desk right now and also at all times.
I really enjoy those books. And I also really love old sort of Albert Hadley, Sister Parish.
Yeah.
Looking at those books and designers from like really the early days.
Yeah. I think you can learn so much from them. Also Billy Baldwin's.
Love. That's a great book. Decorating.
Yes. And it's really funny.
It is funny.
If you read all of it, it's hysterical. Like he gives, you know, little tidbits about clients and stuff. And it's really funny. And also I'm always struck by how much nothing has changed, even though it was written a long time ago.
No, 100%. His room, the rooms in that book, the pictures, all the images could be so current.
Yeah. And also like his little sidebars about experiences with clients, like that could happen today too.
It does happen today.
Yeah. Well, we have a final few words. what are you working on right now, which seems to be a lot? And are there any new projects you can talk about?
Oh my gosh, I still feel like we're working on these ginormous projects that started during COVID. We're working on a very fascinating historic restoration and renovation in Palm Beach of a landmark property that I'm very excited about. And it's taken forever, and then we still have a long ways to go.
That's so exciting.
I am working on a lake house in Wisconsin that's been in the family for over 100 years. And it's like a sort of like Swiss Family Robinson charming situation that we're getting.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really, I know nothing about the Midwest. So the whole thing is fascinating to me, the whole culture.
Everyone is very nice there. My husband went to Michigan, and everybody that he is friends with who grew up in the Midwest is incredibly nice.
they really are. I mean, we have so many fun projects, but honestly, the thing I'm most excited about, and this isn't plugging it, is getting this other business off the ground, the vanity business. I'm so excited to launch this e-commerce site and to figure out how to establish and run and grow this business.
Yeah, it's like another baby, and there's so much blood, sweat, and tears that goes into creating a product and quality control and making sure it's right and making sure that you can scale up when you get more orders. And it's a lot of work. So congratulations. And it's so exciting.
It is exciting. It is exciting. And it's always, I mean, we're still developing new products. We have like more ideas than we have time to execute. So,
well, lucky for us, because then we get to see more. Our last question that we always ask everyone is, do you have advice for someone looking to define their own interior style?
Take context clues. Like, I would look to fashion and what you wear as a big context clue for what your decorating style should or could be. Like, are you preppy? Are you classic? Are you edgy? Are you a little bit of both? You know, how do you incorporate both of those things? I feel like how someone dresses is always really informative, and it's like something that I recruit that information when I'm working with someone.
Totally. I love that. It's something that I'm always fascinated by, is like the connection between fashion and design, and there is a big crossover between the two.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on. This was so much fun. Where can listeners find more about you and your brands, because you have more than one?
Thank you, Ariel. It was a pleasure. I know we worked for 48 months to get this scheduled. Yeah. People can find me on my website. They can find me at Katie Rosenfeld andandco.com. And then Instagram is just at Katie Rosenfeld.
Thank you so much for coming on. This was so fun, and I was so looking forward to getting to chat with you.
Me too.
I feel like we know each other from Instagram, so it's nice to actually get to hear your voice and get to chat in person.
For sure. Keep in touch.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of Talk Shop. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more thoughtful discussions and amazing guests. Make sure you follow on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so you never miss an episode. And of course, follow me at Ariel Oaken. See you next week.